It's something that many of us, not all of us, struggle with. Emotions. Should we suppress them, bottle them up, let them fly? And what should our kids know about them? Welcome. Thanks for being a part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak, and today we're going to have a program which may make some people feel uncomfortable. Because trying to deal with emotions in the moment is one thing, but talking about them beforehand and trying to understand them, that's a whole ball, another ball of wax. I mean, especially for students, our kids. But that's going to be our discussion today, and I hope we don't make you squirm too much. But if you're into it and if you want to join in, you can email us. We're at tfs@wshu.org, and you can check us out on Facebook. We're at Full Story WSHU. We're going to start the show today by bringing in one of the experts in the field of understanding and dealing with our emotions. Professor Mark Brackett is the founder and the director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. He's a professor in the Child Studies Center at Yale. He's the co-creator of the Ruler Approach. And if that isn't enough, he's the author of Permission to Feel. How are you, Professor Brackett? Thanks for coming on.
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
You know, there's a lot to get to in the next half hour or so, but I'm going to start the program by asking you to take a step back in time. Now, I've read that your mom was anxious. Your dad, I think you described him as a tough guy. I also read that you felt that you were bullied. And here you are today helping us deal with our emotions. How did you get to that point?
Well, what I'd like to say is that I was very fortunate in life that while I did have an anxious mom and a pretty angry dad, and I was bullied pretty horrifically and even had early trauma in my life, but I had an uncle who happened to be a teacher who was building a program to teach kids about their feelings, and he was my hero in life. But I also did many other things. I got involved in the martial arts. I studied psychology. I went for therapy. So in many ways, I've dedicated my entire life to figuring out how to deal with my emotions.
At what age did you start to really figure it out?
Well, when I was in middle school and struggling, you know, I was a terrible student. I was a C&D student when I was a kid. Because I was unable to learn, I was, you know, too worried about survival, to be honest. My uncle was actually staying with my family on weekends because he was studying where I grew up in New Jersey, and we'd have these really rich conversations about feelings like alienation and isolation and anxiety, as well as the positive ones, although I didn't have as many of those. And he offered me strategies and started helping me think about ways that I could use my feelings wisely as opposed to really letting my feelings have power over me.
So how many years ago did he start to talk with you about this? Are we going back now like 20 years, 30 years or so?
Well, I turned 50 2 weeks ago, so we're talking
37
years ago.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
37 years ago. I mean, those ideas, when I step back in time, those ideas back then were still considered somewhat radical?
Well, he was, you know, a maverick. My uncle Marvin was seen as... like the Robin Williams character in Dead Poets Society. You know, he was one of those unique teachers who really understood his students and wanted to work with them and, you know, had no inhibitions. But truthfully, he was not, you know, very well liked. People thought he was a weirdo when I thought he was the most inspiring, thoughtful, caring person I could ever want to know.
Professor, we just did a program the other day where we discussed mental health days for students. And there's a New York State senator who says the anxiety and the mental health issues have reached a point where students need days off so they can chill or they can get some assistance, they can get some help. This ties into what we're talking about, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I don't love the idea personally about, you know, mental health days are a fine thing, but I think we have to look at society and the structure of our schools. We shouldn't have to be at a place where we give them mental health days. We should be at a place where we're restructuring how kids learn and how schools operate so that students are feeling less stress.
Ah, I see what you're saying. You're saying, okay, it's good in theory, but we shouldn't be getting to that point anyway.
I'm saying that we have to focus on prevention as opposed to intervention. that we are a nation that likes to wait until everybody's depressed and anxious and overwhelmed, and then we say, okay, let's do something about it, as opposed to thinking strategically about the way we structure a school, so that obviously stress is okay. You know, it's not about getting rid of stress. You have to be able to manage stress to be successful in life, and it's just the way life is. There's some stressors. But if it's chronic stress, that's saying that there's something wrong with the system, not the individual.
Right. For adults, if you have a job that's stressful all the time, then obviously it's going to get to you sooner or later.
Stress will get to you. It will cause, you know, immune system malfunctions. It will cause mental health issues. The list goes on. So, yes, we need to know how to manage stress effectively.
So are you asking kids to stop and think about their feelings?
I am. But I think importantly, you know, in the work that I've done with my uncle, who's since passed, but when we worked together many years ago to build our first curriculum in this area of social and emotional learning, we failed horrifically. And we failed because the adults, unfortunately, who are raising and teaching kids were not trained in the skills of emotional intelligence to be able to implement what we were asking them to do in the classroom. So what I believe is that we need to first start with our adult population, our parents, our teachers, our CEOs and managers and people in the workforce, so that they have these skills and also can model them to our kids.
What kind of reaction are you getting from the adults, the supervisors, the teachers? Are they willing to do this?
Well, there's a distribution. There are some people like, where have you been all my life? And then there are people who are like, it's not my job to talk about feelings. So is a distribution. I'm pleased to say that I feel like more and more people are recognizing that these skills are critically important. I think businesses are realizing that they don't want to just hire people who are academically talented. They want to hire people who have emotion skills, who can deal with anxiety, frustration, who can be inspiring, who can deal with conflict, who know how to collaborate well. So I do think there's a change happening.
Professor Brackett, you know, I'm sure there are some listeners right now who are hearing this and they're thinking, you know, I don't have time for this. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and this doesn't work in the real world. It's too touchy-feely for them.
Yeah, so what I tell people who have that mindset is that they just don't know enough about how emotions work. And what we argue about in our center is that emotions matter for five really big reasons. One is attention, memory, and learning. How you feel is driving whether or not you're able to pay attention or engaged. The second is decision-making. Whether we want to acknowledge it or not, how we feel is driving the choices that we make each day. And we've done experiments which show that we can shift, for example, a teacher's evaluation of the same essay by just shifting their mood. And then we ask them, do you believe that how you felt had any influence over the way you evaluated? And they say no. And then we show them the graphs that show the difference. So what that tells us is that how we feel literally influences the way we see the world, and that that happens outside of our conscious awareness.
So when my kid came home and he said, look, I got a C on the test because my teacher was in a bad mood, he really wasn't lying to me?
Well, you know, you have to make sure your kid is being, you know, truthful in that situation, right? But you never know. We know that emotions do influence judgments.
You know, it's not to pick on my kid, but I still laugh thinking about when my kid was small and he did something nutty. And I would ask him, what were you thinking? And there was this one time he looked at me and he said, and his exact words were, I guess I wasn't. And I'll never forget that, because I just had to laugh because it was so honest. Because it's difficult to sometimes stop and think in the moment, isn't it?
It is, because we're not trained to do so. You know, like when I talk to people, whether it be a teacher or a manager of a company, and I say, like, how often do you, you know, from meeting to meeting, phone call to phone call, just pause, take a breath, and just check in with how you're feeling? Because what we know from research is that if I'm getting into an argument at home with my family, and I'm like thinking on my way to work, I can't take it anymore, and then I go into my first meeting, and I don't acknowledge the fact that I'm angry at what happened at home, it will have this incidental sort of subconscious influence and the way I talk to people in that meeting and the way I evaluate their ideas. So there really is a benefit to being self-aware, checking in with how you're feeling, and then thinking about what's my strategy to manage that feeling effectively.
Professor, why do you think that your book, your method, has garnered such attention over the last year or so?
I think, you know, the information I provide in my book and our work in schools has garnered attention because people are understanding that emotions matter. And they matter for attention, as I was saying, for learning, for decision-making, for the quality of our relationships, for our mental and physical health, and for our creativity and everyday performance. And the research is so clear now that people with more developed emotional intelligence just are healthier, happier, and more effective, whether it be at home, at school, or in the workplace.
Professor, I'm going to read you part of an email. We've gotten a number of emails already. I'm going to read you part of one that we got from a student teacher in Derby. Her name is Sarah, and Sarah writes, "Social emotional learning is more than just being sensitive. It is teaching students how to identify their emotions and respond to them. This teaching does not have to necessarily interrupt teaching time, but rather can be incorporated into already existing curriculum. Furthermore, these practices help teachers create a classroom environment where students feel safe and welcome, which thusly allows better teaching moments to occur." It sounds like what Sarah is saying in the phrase from many years ago, it's a win-win for everyone.
It's a complete win-win, and I think Sarah and I have written the same book. Because the truth is that this is not something that needs to be isolated. It's not like Feelings Fridays. As I was saying, emotions are driving our attention and our decision-making throughout the day. So we need to both be aware of our feelings and manage them effectively. And when we're teaching this work in schools, what we find is that the best way to do it is to infuse it into instruction. When you're doing a character analysis, what a great opportunity to talk about the feelings of characters and then relate those characters to the students' own lives. So we just find it to be not an add-on, but something that actually helps teachers actually get more out of instruction. And also it helps to have more time on task, because classroom management is one of the biggest problems that teachers complain about. And I think by giving students labels for their feelings and helping them to regulate them effectively, we can actually teach more.
But Professor Brackett, why is it that emotions make us so uneasy? Do you remember when Bill Clinton said, "I feel your pain"? I mean, that still makes some people cringe nowadays. Or when Barack Obama cried after Sandy Hook. And I'll be honest, I cried watching him cry. Why does this get to us like this?
This is a historical issue, you know, that emotions, unlike cognition, right, are seen as weak. That a man in particular who feels fear or shame, right, that represents that that person is not strong enough and capable enough and resilient. But the truth is, every one of us has these feelings every day. You know, it gives me, I'll give you an example. So I was giving a speech, and oftentimes people comment on my vulnerability. They say things, "My goodness, you shared about your traumatic experiences, that you were bullied and that your parents had all these issues." I always say, like, if I can't talk about it, nobody will. But one man said to me, "You know, Mark, I would never share with my own son, you know, that I was bullied, because my son would think I was weak." And I said to the father, "But what if your son is being bullied? And he sees you as this tough guy, like my father was, and he basically doesn't think he can tell you what's happening because he'll think, your son will think that you'll think he's weak." And it just, we're trying to get people to recognize that it's not, emotions are not good or bad. They're just emotions, and they're valuable sources of information to acknowledge and manage effectively.
Professor, can we talk for a minute about social media? Because I was walking on campus the other day, and no one was engaging in conversation. Every single student, every kid was looking at his or her phone. And it's not just kids. I'm not picking on them or singling them out. This is the way it is nowadays, I think, for many adults. Everyone seems to do it. Is this causing havoc with our emotions?
Well, we know from research, and I cover this in my book, that how the time that we spend, you know, on social media does correlate with anxiety and stress. Mostly, I think, because people are in a constant state of comparison, right? This one looks better than I do. This one's got more likes than I do. And when you're spending 5, 6, 7 hours a day, which is where adolescents are right now, the average teenager spends about 6 hours a day on their telephone. That takes a toll on your nervous system, right, and on your, you know, your general psychology. So there's no doubt, you know, that spending time on these devices is influencing our mental and physical health.
Professor, can I get you to listen to something and then ask you to respond to it? Beth Berlin is the interim New York State Education Commissioner. And just a few weeks ago, she told school administrators, some teachers and parents at the beginning of the school year that the state is committed to expanding social-emotional learning for students. So I'd like to play the little soundbite from her and then ask you to comment on it.
I'm so proud of our efforts to advance equity and excellence in our educational system. This is still the top priority of the Board of Regents and the department. A large part of this work is making sure that our schools are welcoming places for all. That's why we have made valuable resources available to help districts implement social-emotional learning. These resources go hand in hand with academic tools and provide a stronger foundation for learning. When school communities improve school culture and climate, students are provided with the tools they need to truly thrive in school and beyond. Supporting students on both a social-emotional level and an academic level provides them with interpersonal skills and a sense of well-being that will help them succeed academically and in life.
So, Professor Brackett, what do you think about that? And is New York State coming around to your line of thinking?
Well, it's funny you ask that question because right now I am literally in the middle of a training in the Hudson Valley with about 15 different districts rolling out RULER, our approach to social emotional learning, literally at this moment. So there is a tremendous amount of interest in New York State and other states, you know, in regard to social emotional learning. As a matter of fact, I was privileged to be able to give a book to every single principal across the 5 boroughs of New York City last week. And we have now worked in over 350 of New York City's public schools, as well as many of the private schools. So I would say that the world, the United States, New York, is ready to take seriously the social and emotional education of its children and adults.
Professor, I know I only have you for another minute or two, but before you go, so it's being rolled out around here, around Connecticut, New York, and so on. How do you get the other states and other parts of the country to join the program?
Well, what we do is we show schools around the nation, you know, what it looks like. And I'm proud to say that we have, you know, a couple hundred schools in the Pacific Northwest and Seattle area. We've got schools in California and Oklahoma and Florida. So we're spreading the word and spreading the practices across the United States. And I think importantly, you know, what I want to mention is that this is not a program for kids. What I'm trying to say in my book and what we're trying to say in our center's work is that social-emotional learning and emotional intelligence are skills and practices and principles that have to be infused into the way leaders of companies lead and principals lead, the way teachers teach, the way students learn, and the way families parent. And only when we have that kind of influence will great things happen.
Professor, I know you're in the Hudson Valley right now, but when you're back at Yale and you're just up the road from us, please let us know, and we'd love to have you come in the studio with us.
I would be honored.
Thank you, sir. Have a good time there.
Thank you.
Professor Mark Brackett, the founder and director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. He's a professor in the Child Study Center at Yale University, the co-creator of the RULER approach, and the author of Permission to Feel. We're going to bring in two other guests right now. Alan Singer is professor of teaching, learning, and technology and the director of the social studies education programs at Hofstra University. Professor Singer, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for having me on today.
It's our pleasure. Thank you. And Professor Jennifer Dauphiné is visiting assistant professor of education at Quinnipiac University. And the professor oversees Quinnipiac's social emotional learning and school climate program. Professor, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Professor Singer, I'm going to start with you. What do you think, sir? Should we be putting more and more effort into getting kids, the students, to understand their emotions? Will it pay off?
Well, at Hofstra, our education program focuses on the whole child. And the idea is, I think Professor Bracken really addressed this, is that as children grow, as they develop, they need social skills, and that these social skills will then transfer over and support them academically. A big push in schools is just to teach kids how to work in teams, how they can cooperate with each other, how they can give leadership, how they can give constructive feedback. So our whole program is designed to support this whole child approach to learning. So I really like this emphasis on social emotional intelligence as part of education. As a social studies teacher, one of the things that I'm seeing a lot of is, you know, issues of race and class in schools. You know, how do we teach children, but also how do we help adults deal with differences of race, class, and ethnicity? Just on Long Island last week, there was an issue where a teacher gave an assignment that that many parents found offensive in one of the Long Island middle schools. And teacher later apologized, and I think that was important. But the reality is that given the differences of race, given the differences of class, given the difference of ethnicities in our society, the ability to work and to live and to succeed with a diverse population is a fundamental skill that young people have to learn. So this focus becomes very, very important.
Professor Dauphiné, could you tell us about Quinnipiac's Social Emotional Learning and School Climate Program?
Sure, and this connects really well with what both professors were saying previously, not just should we teach children to have awareness around emotions, but how do we go about doing that in a way that addresses these larger political issues. So in our approach, adults and children are included in that movement, right? The labor is not strictly on the shoulders of teachers in modeling proactive emotional intelligence and social emotional learning skills. That can't rest on teachers' shoulders alone. That's initially why we find they burn out. Mm. But if we turn toward addressing the structures that are obstructing some of the practices and the cultural shifts that we want to make, we're in a better position to create a climate, at least school by school at the moment, where the whole child approach can operate, can flourish. And that would include bringing in family members and community members who are central to the collaborative process. And that also means affirming cultural identities, lived experiences, and struggles of students in the school. So emotionality is really risky there, because if we acknowledge that many of the emotions we witness and observe in students' behaviors are direct responses to their environment and experiences they're having, anywhere from, you know, living under restrictions and lifestyles of poverty, or a response to school violence, or like what we're seeing now with watching Greta Thunberg's speech at the UN, and there's so much commentary on how children should emote and how the discourse of emotion should be regulated, coming from adults, right, onto children. Are children even involved in the process of defining the SEL supports in their school? So we would even consider that in the way that we're thinking about whole school transformation.
She was fantastic, wasn't she?
Can I build on that?
Because yes, please.
I thought what you said was very important.
Go ahead, Professor.
Right?
Yes, please, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at the Greta Thunberg video, and there were 35,000 thumbs up, but there were 25,000 thumbs down on that video, and there was a mass right-wing campaign really to humiliate the young woman. And I think, for me, I work with secondary school students in secondary schools, And one of the things that I argue is that social-emotional intelligence has to be part of civic education for a democratic society, and that students need to learn how to work with others to build the kind of world that they would like to see. And, I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm a big Greta fan. And I was at the rally in New York City with a number of high school students, and they were learning how to work together with others to build a democratic society, how to build a society with empathy for people whose lives were at risk. So for me, social-emotional intelligence goes hand-in-hand with civics education for democracy. So I wanted to thank you for raising that.
I'm just curious, why so many thumbs down? I did not read the comments. Did they feel that they just didn't like what she was saying, or they didn't like the fact that she was so emotional?
Well, there was an article in today's New York Times which said that a number of the Fox people were very dismissive of her and essentially were rallying their watchers to go online and give it a thumbs down. And so we live in a very contested world right now.
Absolutely.
We have a president of the United States who mocks other people. And I think he could go with some social and emotional intelligence very much. I don't think social and emotional intelligence is right, is Republican or Democrat, but I really think it's very much needed in American society today.
Professor Alan Singer, professor of teaching, learning, and technology, and the director of the social studies education programs at Hofstra University, and Professor Jennifer Dauphiné, visiting assistant professor of education at Quinnipiac University, and the professor oversees Quinnipiac's Social-Emotional Learning and School Climate Program. And Professor Alan Singer is also with us. He is professor of teaching, learning, and technology and the director of the Social Studies Education Programs at Hofstra University. Professor Dauphiné, I want to talk about parents for a second. And my my question is, how do we get parents to come around on this? Because, look, getting into a good college nowadays requires a lot of hard work from students and from their parents from a very young age. Do you think that some parents maybe will object to having their kids work on social skills rather than math and science and language and so on?
It's an interesting question, and I've heard it kind of a 50-50 split. But I think the thing I hear more often, especially from my undergraduate students and students who are in high school, are that their parents are and grandparents are a different generation altogether. And if we could kind of just jump back for a second to Mark's book, the idea of even having a title, right, that emotions matter, which seems so obvious, but Mark's book really speaks to a larger culture of emotional suppression, and that's also generational. We could think about, you know, schools as really kind of becoming very preoccupied with designing these management and regulation sort of metrics around children's feelings. They're separating out instruction and then time to do social emotional learning as if those things aren't mutually constitutive. And at the same time, their parents are frustrated with their sort of engagement and over-engagement in social media. However, if we think about social media as a sort of unregulated space where they can be how they need to be, it may be that they're using their thumbs, but there's no one there to give them, you know, the sort of measurements and discourse around how they should be feeling, which is happening frequently in schools to the effect that, right, their teachers are the ones indicating and sort of praising the expectations for emotional behaviors. So if we could become more emotionally literate, considering in this kind of era, this generation of youngsters, having these emotionally literate spaces that work for them, then their preoccupation with social media isn't necessarily a bad thing, but them creating new frontiers for their communication and emotional freedom, so to speak.
Hmm. So this isn't your granddad's emotional skill set, huh?
We're in a completely different world.
Well, I'm laughing because I'm a granddad.
There we go.
I've had, you know, with children and grandchildren, you know, I think parents have a lot of experience with volatile children and teenagers. I think parents might buy into the idea that their children are learning how to better work with other people, especially with their parents. So I don't think we're looking at an idea that parents are going to reject. I also think that the idea that people can be self-disciplined, that they can direct their effort more effectively, is going to make it possible for students to do better in school. So we're not talking about something that contradicts academic learning. We're talking about something that supports academic learning. And then the last point, in the world of work, the ability to work cooperatively with others is a fundamental skill for success. Young people who do not learn how to work well with others will have a very difficult time in the world of work. Young people who learn how to work well with others are going to be much more successful. And I think social and emotional intelligence supports all of those learning and work and civic skills.
Professor Singer, just to add to what you were just talking about, I have had business leaders tell me that they have had to hire people who, and then train them to give them social skills to answer the phone, to make eye contact in meetings, how to shake hands in business meetings, and so on. I mean, basics, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, you go into a job with a sullen look on your face, or you go into an interview, they're not hiring you. You know, they need people who understand. I mean, all these companies have these team building programs where, you know, they go hiking, they have get-togethers, they have social events. You know, the companies are having to run the team building programs because we haven't done an effective job in the schools supporting the ability of kids to work with others. And I think in our society, again, with tremendous racial, ethnic, and religious divisions, these kinds of social and emotional skills will go far to address the ability of young people to work together across difference and may finally create the world, you know, that Martin Luther King talked about, where young black children and white children and now Latino and Asian children can walk together hand in hand. We have to teach kids how to do that so that adults know how to do that.
Alan Singer is professor of teaching, learning, and technology and the director of the social studies education programs at Hofstra University. And Jennifer Dauphiné is visiting assistant professor of education at Quinnipiac University. And the professor oversees Quinnipiac's social, emotional learning and school climate program. My thanks to both of you. I appreciate it very much, and I hope you come back soon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Two guests are going to join us to round out the show today. David Gamberg is joining us. He was on with us just the other week, as a matter of fact. He is the superintendent of Southold and Greenport Schools on Eastern Long Island. Superintendent Gamberg, thank you for coming back on. We appreciate it.
Ron, thank you for having me.
And John Garrido is the president of the New York Association of School Psychologists. Hi, John. Thanks, and welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
Superintendent Gamberg, this seems to fit this conversation today. It seems to fit right into the conversation that you and I were having the other week about whether or not students should have mental health days, doesn't it?
It fits like a hand in a glove, actually. And this is really on the side of the prevention end of that, if you will. So listening to your two previous guests, there's so much that we can kind of build on the idea, even you brought up, about shaking hands and making eye contact and supporting the social-emotional wellness of students of all ages, from elementary school all the way through high school. I think the key to all of this is authenticity. And, you know, the idea that there's some kind of prepackaged program out there, I think one of your guests talked about weaving it in and bringing it in the context of academic learning so parents don't feel as though this is yet another thing that gets added to the plate for students to perhaps water down their ability to be successful in life. And it is very much, as one of your previous guests stated, the keys to success in life is the ability to do those kinds of working together with others. That's the nature of work.
John Garrido, is there anything really new here, or did some of us just need to get a wake-up call, if you will? I mean, some of this sounds like plain old common sense.
That's a very good question. I think right now there was some good discussion earlier about the importance in education of working on those basic academic skills. But so often, I think we have not really looked at those social emotional pieces that also engender success in life. Not only being aware of ourselves, but being able to regulate ourselves in a good way, being able to interface with other people. Once upon a time, you didn't need to always have those skills if you always worked behind the desk, behind a computer. But we're finding that society needs more and more our ability to regulate and manage ourselves in a good way and to engender those interpersonal skills. For some, they already have it, just in the same way that some people may come in with innate, really good reading or math skills. For others, really more that explicit piece is needed. But it is needed in our society now and going forward.
Superintendent Gemberg, have you or your staff tried this already in the schools? Have you been working on it? Have you been weaving it in, or a version of this?
Absolutely. So the key that you bring up there is weaving it in. So, for example, we do something in both of these school districts called student-led class meetings. And that provides students with an opportunity in the classroom setting, not in an assembly, but something that's as local as a classroom, which is a very social, emotional place for children to grow as leaders and to be able to air out their thoughts, not in an academic sense, but in a very non-threatening sense. Sometimes this is done in schools called morning meetings. But the key here, again, is that authenticity, where students can gain a sense of agency, and in doing that on a regular basis, that's also the key. It's kind of like, you know, heart medication. You can't take it once a month, once a year. You've got to do it regularly. It has to become a habit. And I think if we do that and we couple that with things that are not by definition social emotional practices, but they engender that, like working in a garden, building things. In fact, just very quickly, I came across the work of a professor. She's a neuroscientist at the University of Richmond, Dr. Kelly Lambert, and she's done some studies that connect busy hands and brain chemistry. And there's actually a neuroassociation with people who can do things with their hands and build things and get a sense of satisfaction and their ability to have a healthier, happier mind, if you will. And I think we can make that happen within the math and the science learning experiences in school.
It's interesting that you say that, because I know some people who on weekends really enjoy cooking and they enjoy doing something with their hands and creating. Yeah. And they will tell you it just makes them feel good.
There's science behind that. They're not imagining it. And my goal is to weave that into the school experience for not just some students who happen to do this type of thing, but for every child, because that's the key. That will balance things out with the using the thumbs on social media. It's the idea of working that in a natural, authentic, and purposeful way, in a sense, to shape the school environment in a way where they can look around and see the effect of their learning, applying the math by building a barn or building a shed, that kind of a thing.
John Garrido, can I get your thoughts, please, on social media and the use of phones nowadays and their effects on emotional learning?
That's a really good question. And when I talked a little bit about our changing landscape, I certainly think our access to technology, especially immediate, has perhaps been one of our contributing game changers. When you walk around, you'll see people, when they're not engaged in whatever it is they're doing, they're often engaged on their phone or in media. And that suggests a couple of things. One, there is this need to be connected. A lot of times people are constantly texting one another. You know, I kind of think it's funny. A colleague of mine actually said, "Why are you calling me when you can always text me?" But it really does identify the changing landscape in terms of how we're interfacing more with screens and not necessarily directly with each other. Sometimes it's easier to type something out than it is to have a conversation. I think another dimension is we are now more than ever in a time of immediate gratification. If there is anything that we want, we can get it immediately by touching a screen. So again, some of the things that maybe we took for granted some time ago, as far as establishing interpersonal relationships or even being right there in the moment, are things that we can no longer take for granted.
Superintendent Gamberg, what do the parents in your school systems, in your schools, tell you about this? And I'm thinking about parents who might be preoccupied, if you will, with test scores and how the kids are ranking compared to the other students.
Yes, I think that is it is a constant challenge. I think we're very fortunate in the communities where I serve as the superintendent. They very readily understand the need for balance. They see and read and hear about the difficulties that we talked about the other week with, you know, mental illness and those kinds of things, where as a preventative, they want to make sure that students are not necessarily chasing the test score at the expense of being a well-rounded citizen, if you will. And that really is at the core, I think, of what a lot of Americans believe is extremely important in our public school system, is that we are, in effect, educating the future citizens of our country, and we want them to be well-rounded, healthy, certainly be able to challenge themselves, you know, certainly not be afraid to do hard work, those kinds of things, but to strike a balance. And I think that that is possible.
So the parents do understand that you're working on the whole student, if you will?
I believe that they do, and I'm very public about that. I offer opportunities in the local press to write opinion pieces that gives them a sense of the rationale as to why we need to maintain that balance and the importance and the direct link, by the way, to academic success as well as success in life. We're very proud of the kinds of things I described earlier with, you know, using the hands and building things that it could be community service. It could be something that benefits something within the school. And when it's tangible and you could see that, it's something that people can relate to.
John Garrido, as the president of the New York Association of School Psychologists, what would you like New York State to do to help you in your mission?
Thank you for asking that. I think already New York State is moving in that direction. I think really has been discussed a lot, focusing on those social-emotional learning skills, mental health pieces, in just as much as those reading, writing, and math skills. Really should get kind of equal playtime. And with the development of some of the new standards that have come out, with additional work in terms of teaching these skills at the whole school level, not to take them for granted, I think really relates to what we are looking for at NIESP in terms of making sure that kids, all kids, are ready to be successful at school, at home, and in life. And I think that this will help move us in that direction. I'm glad to see the greater focus on social-emotional learning and mental health awareness and advocacy.
Superintendent Gamberg, we have about 45 seconds left. What do you need for support, sir?
Well, just to build on your other guest, you know, the one concern I would have is if we start to measure it and assess it and demand, you know, data that supports the work. I understand that efficacy is very important, but it needs to be natural, if you will. It has to be a narrative, the story that we are able to tell, to point out examples of how we're weaving this in and how this is the stories of the students that they're able to tell about their ability to navigate effectively. So I think that that's a very important piece. I would want it not to get lost in the bureaucracy of sometimes what laws and policymakers can sometimes get bogged down in.
David Gamberg is the superintendent of South Hold and Greenport Schools on Eastern Long Island, and John Garrido is the president of the New York Association of School Psychologists. Gentlemen, thank you. I enjoyed the conversation. Please come back.
Same here. Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Appreciate it.
As we all well know, the news about President Trump, his phone call with the president of the Ukraine, and the push to have President Trump impeached is updating almost minute by minute. Tonight at 8, WSHU is going to bring you NPR special coverage on the latest news. It's going to be hosted by Ari Shapiro and Audie Cornish, along with a team of political correspondents, reporters, and editors. Now, if you're listening to the full story on 91.1, and you want to listen to the special, you can do that online. That'll be on WSHU.org, where it will be streamed on our News Talk channel. That's going to do it for our show today. Sabrina Garone is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Today's show was produced by the one and only Natalie Chafari. Our associate producers are Fatou Sangari, Sabrina Garone, and Roberta Rojas. J.D. Allen is the producer, Ann Lopez is the senior producer, and Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.